Case number 12-1367, Newspaper Association of America Petitioner versus Postal Regulatory Commission. Mr. Long for Petitioner NAA. Mr. Douse for Intervenors NAA Valpak. Mr. Clare for Respondent PRC. And Ms. Raring for Intervenors USPS Velazquez.
I'd like to ask you a question before you begin. I received this in the mailbox Saturday, and I kept it. I do not subscribe to the Washington Post, but this is what came through the mail. This is the, is this the Sunday circular, or is this the mid total market coverage insert, or do you know?
So if you received that over the weekend, it's probably this special Saturday mailing to non-subscribers, so it wouldn't be the total market coverage product. Typically comes in the middle of the week.
Now, this has local services advertised.
Well, both types of mailings do have the national advertising, too. That's one of the things that the commission said in its opinion that's not true. There's evidence in the record. If you just take the 10 commenters who put their comments in the open record, not even counting the ones who filed their comments under seal, there were 600,000 of the national ads sent in that kind of mailer. So the one that you got this week may not have had any national ads in it, but many of them do.
All right, and this is what the newspapers are saying is jeopardized because advertisers believe.
Yes, that's exactly right. From the newspaper's perspective, the advertising will be taken away from the newspapers and will go over to this new Velazquez product. That will be harm to the newspapers, harm to the marketplace, and then in terms of improving the position of the Postal Service, because the newspapers pay a lot more for their mail, and because they have just a huge amount of it, $500 million a year, only a tiny amount has to switch before the Postal Service will also lose money on this deal. So those are really our two main points on unreasonable harm.
So there are two markets you're talking about. One is the market of distribution, and the other is the advertising revenue.
Yes, and
well, that distribution question on newspapers that mail ads, such as the one that Judge Henderson referred to, why is it not true that the opportunity to have a similar agreement negotiated with the post office that Velazquez has ameliorate the harm that you're talking about? I'm not talking about the advertising revenue, I'm just talking about the distribution.
Well, because the newspapers are typically much smaller, many of them are local, and what they want to do is typically send the advertising to their subscribers in the newspaper and then mail or use private carrier delivery for the non-subscribers, as you got, Judge Henderson. And so they do not have what's called, you know, the saturation. They would usually be a lesser coverage. So they're going to have great difficulty qualifying for this kind of discount.
Because of their size, is that the idea?
Well, it's a combination of size, and their approach is not to send to everybody through the mail. It's to send to subscribers through the newspaper and to non-subscribers either through the mail, or they may switch to a cheaper private carrier option for the non-subscribers. I don't know if yours came through
no,
the mail.
No, this was to postal customers.
Right. Well, the great risk to the Postal Service, and there's over 40 comments in the record supporting this, is that if they lose even some of that from the Washington Post or others, that will completely offset the minuscule net contribution that they're expecting to get from this. They're expecting on average as little as $1.5 million a year. And when you're talking about $500 million in postal
records. Mr. Rowan, I didn't quite follow your answer to Judge Randolph and, as to why newspapers couldn't get the same deal. Were you saying because they're not seeking the same saturation coverage because there's a set of the population that are subscribers?
Exactly.
Is that it? Is that it?
Exactly. Okay. They're trying
That's
to do the same.
That's a diminishing number over time, right? I mean.
Well, and again, I mean, from the point of view of the Postal Service, if fewer people are subscribing to the right. Washington Post, that could potentially be more revenue for the Postal Service as more and more people get it through the mail. And yet they had no, mm-hmm. They simply rejected all the evidence. So on unreasonable harm to the marketplace, one of our points is that the commission had an established way to look at this factor, starting with its very first NSA.
You say there's an established way of looking at it. I mean, there weren't a lot of examples of this, were there? I mean, how many NSAs have there been?
I think there have been 7 or 8.
That many?
There was also a rule. I mean, there's lots of examples. I mean, in each NSA, if you go back and look at them, the commission said we need to
so
look.
So you're saying there were 7 or 8 NSAs in which reasonable harm to the marketplace involved taking a look at the harm to the competitor?
Yes, if you look at the very first one, the Capital One,
right.
The commission said that it must, it must consider the impact of NSAs on competitors to the NSA partner. That was actually the Lifeline proceeding. In Capital One, it said harm to competitors is an important part of the evaluation process. Now, it never said, to be clear, that harm to competitors would prevent approval, but it said it's an important part of the process. It has to be considered. They actually had a rule, Rule 193F, that said.
Excuse me, what does that mean, you have to consider? What does that mean?
Well, it means you have to look at the sort of most precise way to figure out what the commission was getting at, Judge Randolph, is they had Professor Panzer, a professor of economics in this Capital One NSA, come in and give expert testimony on what would be required. And he said, you can't just assume that because the Postal Service and the NSA partner agree that this is going to be Pareto superior or Pareto optimal, that nobody's going to be made worse off. He said you have to look at how the surplus is distributed and therefore harm to competitors of the downstream partner is going to be an important part of the analysis in every case. And so they spoke.
I know, but what I'm asking you is under your submission, how does that fit in? What is the, it consider something doesn't really tell me anything in terms of analysis.
Well, we're not saying that we absolutely win on harm to competition on remand because what the commission did, they had this new standard, which they announced without any prior notice. They said now to show there's no unreasonable harm to competition, all we have to show is that the Postal Service is not pricing below its costs, so it's not engaging in predatory pricing. That's a great change. It's unexplained, so there needs to be a remand, simply for that purpose, for them to explain their change. It's not consistent with basic principles of statutory construction. There is language in the statute, in the 2006 statute, where Congress said we want to ensure that each product covers its costs attributable. And that's the exact language that ensures that the Postal Service prices above cost.
Can I ask you about, this has been in place in Atlanta, Atlanta, right?
In
Phoenix for a year. Is there any evidence that it's hurt any newspaper in either one of those?
We did submit declarations to establish standing to bring this appeal. And what's happening is...
Well, but I mean in the last year. Did the declarations go
Just in general, what's happening, actually. It's exactly what the public representative in the newspapers said would happen. The newspapers are losing because they're having to make changes to meet the lower price. In fact, so far, I think Velasquez has had trouble launching. They've got, you know, some customers lined up. So the Postal Service is not getting revenue. It's probably losing revenue because newspapers are having to cut corners and save more money and are losing the mail less. So, you know, so far the experience is this is not working for the Postal Service and it's harming newspapers, which is, by the way, the record of all these NSAs. We cited a GAO report and the Commission's own report. These, looking at a group of them as a group, they've lost money. The other one that's in effect right now, the Discover NSA, lost $4 million. So there's been tremendous losses. And, you know, the Commission itself now says in its brief, look, predatory pricing by itself is too narrow. It should be any harm to competition. Well, that also requires a remand because they didn't look at that, and the public representative said there could very well be harm to competition. And there are other things.
I probably shouldn't ask you this. I should ask the your opponents. But I have trouble understanding the concept of predatory pricing with respect to the postal service. I mean, who are the competitors? And we're talking, you're not talking about advertising revenue. You're talking about distribution again, right? So who are the competitors?
Well, I think Your Honor, it's both, and that's one of the...
That the post office would be trying to drive out business by, you know, charging a below-cost rate. Who are they? It's not the newspapers.
What the Postal Service, what the Commission said in its order was that as long as the Postal Service was pricing above its cost so as not to drive its competitors out of business, then there was no unreasonable harm to competition. It completely ignored that there's also competition going on between Velasquez and newspapers, and you have to look at that sort of competition.
Is the theory that because of the discount that the Postal Service is giving Velasquez, that Velasquez then can engage in predatory pricing?
Yes, so that's exactly what the public representative said.
But that's a separate antitrust violation if that occurred. That's not whether they would or wouldn't is.
Well, what the public representative said, and this is the public representative representing the public interest, said the Postal Service should not be facilitating that sort of arrangement. You shouldn't create something that gives the.
That would be illegal. You'd have to assume they'd be acting illegally.
Excuse me?
You'd have to be assuming that Velasquez would, because of the agreement, the negotiated agreement, that Velasquez would then take that and act in violation of the law.
Well, and the public representative thought that was a serious risk here. The Commission refused to consider it at all. I believe it now admits before this court that it is a relevant consideration. It's a predatory pricing standard is not coherent for other reasons. I mean, if you think about it, it has a market definition, not a very good one, but it starts by saying, well, that's very important. That's essential in order to see whether there's unreasonable harm to the market. But then it adopts this predatory pricing standard. It says, well, the Postal Service is pricing above cost, so that standard is met. That actually means market definition is irrelevant. It wouldn't matter what the market is, because they're just looking at whether the Postal Service is pricing below cost. So for that and other reasons, I mean, they came up with this predatory pricing standard out of the blue, quite different from what they'd applied at every time in the past. It doesn't really fit even within its own opinion because market definition isn't even relevant. They now say, oh, it's got to be broader than just predatory pricing. This needs to go back for further analysis. They need to consider some of the many points that have been raised before this court, and they need to consider the evidence that they refuse to consider, that, you know, there is likely to be a net financial loss to the Postal Service, as there has been in many other NSAs.
Did you answer Judge Randolph's question, if I understood it, and that is, who are the competitors of the post office in the distribution aspect of it? I mean, who? You said that as long as it's not below the cost of the post office. Now, who are the other distributors that you're talking about?
Well, the post office, I think, views its competitors as newspapers to the extent they deliver advertising, and also the private carriers. But from the newspaper's perspective, they're selling advertising. They, you know, have people deliver the newspapers, or they use the mail, and their competitors are Velasis and others, and one of the several flaws in this is that they, you know, their standard just looks at whether the Postal Service is pricing below its costs to drive its competitors out of business, which really misses the point. Now, Judge Randolph is saying maybe after you do the analysis it comes out the same way, but, you know, this is very important, and to say, you know, the analysis has to be done. The public representative thought there could very well be a problem. Judge Randolph, he explained that it could be in the nature of offering, you know, free advertising for up to a year and causing other disruptions in the market. So our plea is that this needs to be looked at by the agency. They need to consider it. They can't simply have this unannounced, unexplained change of position that, you know, is really incoherent with its own opinion, in which they're now modifying even before this court. That's just not good enough.
Are newspapers eligible to enter into an NSA?
Well, in theory, anybody could come forward and say we want an NSA, but for the reasons we've been discussing, it would be extremely difficult for any newspaper to qualify. Again, you know, they're on a much smaller scale, most of them, and they really don't want to do this. The saturation mail, as we've been discussing, where you mail to everybody. They want to do a pattern where they...
But this is mail. Yeah, this is mail to everybody.
But if you're not a subscriber, then they mail it to you. And so, you know, the Postal Service would say, well, that's, you know, that's not the same thing.
Okay. All right. Okay. We'll give you some time and reply. Mr. Dallas?
May it please the court. My name is Steve Dowse. I represent the National Newspaper Association. I am also arguing on behalf of our co-interveners, Valpak Direct Marketing Systems and Valpak Dealers Association.
Is your membership different from the Newspaper Association of America?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
Okay. What's the difference?
In general, the larger newspapers belong to NAA. The smaller newspapers, the community newspapers, are members of NNA, National Newspaper Association, which is why we were especially interested in the small business issue. I would like to begin by addressing a question that Judge Randolph asked a minute ago about why Velasis wouldn't be guilty of predatory pricing if it sold at low prices in the downstream market. And just by way of prefacing that, a lot of the confusion in the Commission's opinion was its failure to distinguish between the two different markets. There are upstream markets and downstream markets, which it kind of lumped together. The reason it wouldn't be guilty of predatory pricing is that it has actually received a lower discounted price from the Postal Service. The real issue in the downstream market is, has that discounted price inappropriately distorted competition in the downstream market by essentially cross-subsidizing through the use of a lower price in the upstream market?
What I had in mind, maybe this is what you're saying, is that because they get a discount on the cost of distribution, that they can pass that on to their advertisers and charge less for the opportunity the advertiser to get on their, in one of their mailings. But if they priced lower than their cost, they'd be guilty of predatory pricing, theoretically, right? Which would be illegal.
If they had monopoly power and if they priced below the cost they were getting from the Postal Service with a probability of successful monopolization, yes. The real question for antitrust analysis, for competition analysis here, though, is the upstream issue that the Commission should have dealt with but didn't, which is what does this price do to competition in the downstream market? Does it, in effect, extend the distortions of a monopoly market downstream into an adjacent market? And that's an issue that is dealt with frequently in regulated industries. There are lots of ways of dealing with that. The Commission simply ignored that issue and did not grapple with it. But that's the key issue that it should have been dealing with here. And had it conducted a proper antitrust analysis, it would have recognized that. Defects in their analysis were dealt with at some length in our brief, but the net effect is that the Commission's competitive analysis consisted almost entirely of armchair speculation. The Commission has no antitrust expertise, much like trying to find your way around an unfamiliar city, if you don't have a map or a GPS and you don't ask directions, you're likely to get lost. That's what happened to the Commission here. Now, it had a map. It had the merger guidelines, but it turned out that was the wrong map, and they didn't follow it anyway. But when Congress imports antitrust principles into a regulatory regime, it also imports all of the underlying wisdom of how those principles are applied that is developed over many years in the antitrust field. There's an excellent discussion of that very principle in a concurring opinion by Judge Kavanaugh in a recent case, Comcast versus the FTC, 717 F3rd 982-987, in which that whole issue is gone into at some length. You can't simply say, as the Commission did, that we will borrow the concepts, but not all the subsidiary principles that go with it.
I need to ask you about your contention that regarding the delegation matter.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I am trying to piece together what happened before the Commission, and as I understand it, Valpak submitted comments, and in those comments, I guess it was May of 2012, the delegation question came up, and it was the argument was that the resolution cannot be relied upon by the Postal Service because that would be an improper delegation. Correct?
I believe that is correct.
And then the Postal Service filed their reply comments, and they said two things. Number one, they responded to that argument that you made. But number two, there was actual approval in this situation of the specific terms of the NSA.
They contend there was review and or approval, but I think
In the comments, they said the NSA was submitted to the governors and it was actually approved. And as evidence of that, they pointed to the actual contract itself. So that's where matters stood as of June 1st, 2012. I may have the dates wrong. Did Valpak ever come back and contest the factual assertion of the Postal Service, and if so, where can I find that in the record?
Your Honor, I don't believe there was any further fact development. Valpak's point is simply that because this is a non-delegable duty and it is assigned to the governors, it requires a formal approval.
Where does the formal part come from? The Postal Service says that that we submitted this to the governors, that the contract, the agreement itself, required us to do so, forget about the resolution, that satisfies the obligation of the governors and the obligation of the Postal Service under the statute.
Your Honor, I'd make 2 points in response. First, I think it's ironic that the Postal Service, or that the commissioners, were very willing to accept this simple assertion by the Postal Service at face value when they totally rejected much better supported assertions on the part of newspapers about the kind of harm they were likely to suffer.
Well,
I think there's a double standard at issue there. But
that's a separate question. And the Postal Service in their brief, well, first, your brief to us, the topside brief, did not make any assertion, even though I guess it was perhaps teed up, that contradicted the Postal Service's statement in their comments that there was actual approval.
I think, Your Honor, the nature of the approval goes back to the statutory authorization itself. And 39 U.S.C. 404B requires that the governors, not the board, not anyone else, not the Postal Service, the governors, are authorized to establish reasonable and equitable classes and rates. In order for this NSA to go into effect, they had to do that. The governors had to establish. Now, that kind of language strongly suggests a degree of formality that is missing in this case.
That's not an argument you made in your briefs, is it?
I think the brief made that argument. It said, in essence,
degree of formality? I don't know if the word formality, I don't recall even saying that word.
When the brief talked about authorization and approval, that was certainly the intent. That was what was understood, that was required. Perhaps it wasn't made as clearly as it could have been, but that was certainly the intention, that the informal kind of approval the Postal Service is talking about doesn't suffice under the statute.
Okay, we'll give you a couple minutes to reply. Mr. Clare?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning. May I please the Court? I'm Jeffrey Clare. I'm counsel for the PRC in this matter. Your Honors, I'd like to turn directly to the assertion that in requiring evidence of harm to competition rather than merely harm to competitors, the Commission has departed from settled administrative precedent. There have been approximately 11 agreements like this. This is the second under the new statute. There were 9 before the statute was enacted. And notwithstanding the assertions you hear today, there is no instance in which a party came before the Commission or its predecessor and made an assertion that they would suffer a competitive harm as a result of the
argument. Is it your argument that the statute changed anything?
No,
it didn't. Okay.
This is one of those the kind of argument, Your Honor, where the Court is simply going to have to, in light of the differing views of the administrative precedent, the Court is simply going to have to decide for itself who has the better of this argument. I would, in that regard, however, refer to the Court to page 5 of the Discover Financial matter, page 94 of the Capital One matter, page 37 of the Lifeline matter, page 43 of the Bookspan matter, page 39 of the HSBC matter, page 80 of the Bank One matter, and page 16 of the Capital One extension matter. At each of those places, you'll find the Commission stating that nobody came before and made an allegation that they would be competitively harmed by the negotiated service agreement before them. It is simply not the case that the Commission has departed from prior precedent in this matter. This is the first case in which the Commission has been called upon to consider whether allegations of competitive harm meet the statutory standard that the agreement will produce unreasonable harm to the marketplace. Now, in making that determination for the first time in this proceeding, the Commission adopted an interpretation that is, I think, is manifestly consistent with the plain language of the statute. The statute doesn't say harm to competitors. It says harm to the marketplace. Standard notions of what constitutes harm to the marketplace mean harm to competition, not harm to individual competitors within the marketplace. And in making this, what I have to say is an utterly unsubstantiated contention that the Commission has departed from prior administrative precedent. There is, I think, in there an implicit acknowledgement that in terms of the plain language of the statute, in light of deference principles under Chevron, the petitioners and their supporters simply do not have a leg to stand on that matter. I'd like to also address, Your Honors, some of the earlier questions about the diversion of advertising products that are already in the mail out of the mail, causing the Postal Service to lose revenue. One of the statutory criteria for approval of these agreements is they have to inure to the net benefit of the Postal Service. I don't think there's a reasonable dispute that in terms of the cost per piece and revenue per piece, these are profit-making endeavors per piece. The argument is instead that any profit generated therein will be offset by newspapers taking products out of the mail that are currently in the mail. And I'd ask the court to consider...
Can you back up to the your first argument? And so let me see if I get your point. You're saying of the 9, 10, or 11 cases where NSAs were entered, this is the first time in which a competitor has appeared to say, we've been harmed.
Yes.
But that's not the only issue here. I mean, in those previous cases, wasn't harm to competitors a factor that was to be considered?
Well, Your Honor, no one was before the Commission arguing that the...
And so the Commission didn't talk about harm to competitors?
Only in the sense that the Commission was saying when we have an appropriate case to decide whether harm to competitors constitutes unreasonable harm to the marketplace, we'll decide it. There is no case in which the Commission actually took up that question and made a decision until this one. This is the first case in which that
happened. One of the problems I have with your presentation is oral presentations are never as precise as written, but when you talk about harm to the marketplace and considering harm to competitors as opposed to a competition in general, I'm not sure whether you're switching back and forth between, number one, competitors of the Postal Service, or number two, competitors of the Velasquez. And if you go, and this is one of the problems I have with the Commission's decision, maybe you can address it for me. If you go to, I guess it's JA 48. It's the
48, Your Honor. I'm sorry, was that 48, Your Honor?
548.
548.
The Commission says they rely on Professor Panzer's approach, stating competitors of the Postal Service, such as providers of advertising media, might find themselves adversely affected. However, I do not believe that competitors have economic standing to protest the Postal Service pricing policies unless they're anti-competitive. And that's fine, but what that leaves out is the effect on the competitors, not of the Postal Service, but of Velasquez.
I understand,
Your Honor. And Professor Panzer, in fact, in the very same proceeding that the Postal Service is relying upon, said that they should consider the effect of the terms of the NSA on competition in the downstream industry. Now, that would be the competitors of Velasquez, right?
Yes, sir.
And what does the Postal Service say about that?
The Commission, Your Honor.
Or the Commission, I'm sorry.
Your Honor, I think part of this case is in somewhat unique, Your Honor, in that in most of the other prior cases, you had someone like Discover Financial Services, they issued the Discover credit card, for example. They send out a lot of mailing, bills, solicitations, and so forth. They're getting a discount on the mail, and the only competitor in that sense is other users of the mail. This case is different in that there are really two kinds of competition at stake.
Right.
There are, if you're a business, you want to have an ad campaign, you want somebody to manage that ad campaign, you're looking for somebody who will manage the ad campaign. And in that case, the competitors are the newspapers and someone like Velasquez, a aggregator of advertising who will place it. Then, in addition, you have somebody who's, you need to find somebody who will get that advertising to the consumer, who will deliver it to the consumer's home in some sense. And in that context, you have competitors for delivery of the product to the consumer's home. So you have people like the Postal Service. You also have the newspapers who have their own delivery mechanisms. You have private delivery services that will do things like take your advertisement and hang it on a doorknob. Those are the competitors in that market. In virtually all the other cases, I think in all the other cases, you only had competition among users of the mail, and that's why that's not addressed. The competition among people delivering the product is rather than users of the mail. That's why in those earlier cases there's no discussion of that. What the Commission has said is when we have such a circumstance before us, we will consider it. But there was no case in which there were allegations of that kind of harm until this one. And that's why, again, we maintain that the contention that there's a departure from administrative...
I'm not talking about departure. What I'm concerned about is why didn't the Commission consider the effect of the discount on Bellasis's competitors, such as the newspapers and Valpak?
Well, Your Honor, the Commission's looking at really the only thing before the Commission is an input into Velasquez's cost, the cost of delivery. Now, what the Velasquez does with that in terms of making arrangements, business arrangements with other parties, whether it is in turn going to engage in predatory pricing, entirely speculative. There's simply nothing in the record that supports the notion that Velasquez is going to turn around and violate the antitrust law. Moreover, I think there are some limits
to it. Well, they don't have to violate the antitrust law. The question is whether the Commission had an obligation in assessing whether there be harm to the marketplace to consider the effect on not on competition, but on the competitors, the harm to the competitors. And the Commission relies on half of Professor Panzer's testimony, but the other half they don't rely on. I mean, they don't even mention it. Where he said that that you have to consider the effect of on the downstream industry.
Well, again, Your Honor, the only thing the agreement purports to do is set a price for mailing the product. There's nothing before the Commission about what Velasquez is going to do once it has that price in hand. And what the Commission has said is that the Postal Service has offered a reasonable non-predatory price to someone using its services. I don't know what evidence in the record petitioners are talking about subconduct that Velasquez might engage in subsequent to that that would constitute evidence of some sort of anti-competitive conduct. The Commission can really only decide the case on the evidence before it, and the only evidence before it are the terms of the agreement, what the Postal Service is going to charge, whether those charges are fairly competitive prices or whether they're anti-competitive prices and so forth, and allegations that revenues will be diverted out of the mail stream in response to this. And
so if I understand you correctly, your response is that there wasn't sufficient evidence to indicate that there would be any harm to, number one, the competitors of Velasquez, or number two, to competition in the market seeking to get advertising.
Well, Your Honor, the only evidence of that kind of harm is in the price that Velasquez would have to pay for having someone deliver its product to the consumer. That's the only evidence of that nature. The Commission looked at that in detail and determined that indeed Postal Service's prices were not predatory in that regard, that the prices were above their costs. In terms of other kinds of competitive injuries that Velasquez might attempt to inflict on other competitors, the assumption is that it's going to comply with the antitrust law. I think that's in the absence of some sort of firm evidence to the contrary. The assumption is that the Velasquez is going to take the price of the Postal Service.
I think maybe I'm putting this too simply, but I thought the theory was by your opponents that because Velasquez is getting a discount on the distribution, that as a consequence of that, Velasquez, without violating the antitrust laws, can charge advertisers less.
Yes, I think that is.
And as a result of that, then advertising revenue will flow to Velasis away from, for example, Val Packer newspaper.
Oh, yes, of course, Your Honor. That's an argument that the newspapers might lose money as a consequence of fair competition. And what the commission said about that is the statute doesn't protect you from the consequences of fair competition. It protects you from unreasonable harm to the marketplace, and there's no showing of that as long as the Postal Service is offering its product in a agreement that turns on the price of the product, as long as the Postal Service is operating at its product at a reasonable cost. The notion, again, that there is so much competitive harm that will result is newspapers taking their products out of the mail, that the Postal Service simply can't turn a profit for that reason, really isn't supported by the record either. I think the petitioner's argument in this regard confuses cause and effect. The newspapers and other were already taking their product out of the mail in favor of cheaper delivery systems, and this agreement is a response to that problem, not a cause of it. At page 147.
Can I interrupt you?
Yes, Your Honor.
I want to ask the same question in a different way. Is it your position on behalf of the commission that the commission does not have to consider anything other than whether the effect on competition of the Postal Service competitors? So as long as the Postal Service is not engaging in predatory pricing, then it's okay regardless of the effect on the downstream industry?
No, Your Honor. The standard is harm to the marketplace in an agreement like this one. That would be harm to the competitors, the Postal Service, as well as harm to the marketplace of people competing with Velasis for the delivery of the mail, harm in both contexts. But the only kind of evidence of that injury is whether the price the Postal Service is charging is fair. There's no argument that there's some sort of illegal arrangement that Velasis has as a consequence of this agreement. There's no argument that Velasis is going to engage in some other kind of anti-competitive conduct. The only argument is that Velasis is going to take this favorable price and use it to offer a more favorable price to its customers. And the fact that newspapers might lose advertising revenue as of that is not harm to competition. It's not harm to the marketplace. It is the workings of the marketplace. Moreover, what is left out of that argument is all the ways that newspapers have of fairly responding to that. The commission has taken some pains to make sure to instruct the Postal Service that if a newspaper comes in with a similar request for a similar rate discount in circumstances where new mail revenue will be generated for the Postal Service, Postal Service must give that fair consideration. The Commission noted that the newspapers have an ability to compete for this advertising revenue.
Sometimes, for example, taking out the Sunday supplement, which comes on Saturday around here, advertising supplement, and taking it out of the distribution of the actual newspaper and start mailing it? Is that the idea?
Insofar as the newspapers would like to have a better price for delivery of their product, the Commission has set standards that make sure that newspapers can come to the Postal Service and ask for a similar kind of arrangement. Commission also took note of the other ways in which newspapers can compete for this advertising revenue. As is true in most marketplaces, consumers are looking for more than simply price. There are unique advantages to having your advertising delivered through the newspaper that are really the province of the newspapers alone. Some consumers think that their the status of their brand is enhanced by having it delivered through the newspaper. Some advertisers believe that because newspaper products are delivered to people who ask for them, and because the newspapers have knowledge of the particular demographics of their circulation, it's more valuable to the newspapers to an advertiser to have their advertising delivered through the newspapers. I'd point the court to page 220 of the appendix. These are the comments from the public representative that describe the sort of logistics and mechanics of this market. What the public representative concluded was as you know, before this agreement, newspapers were the dominant player in the market for this advertising, the dominant player. Now, what the agreement offers is, you know, the Postal Service can't offer the same kind of qualitative advantages that a newspaper can offer. What this agreement does is the Postal Service gives the consumer another, the advertising purchaser, another option. Instead of getting the sort of the kind of premium benefits of the newspaper, it can look for a deal with a better price. So the consumers have more choice, not less choice. And in the world of competition analysis, that kind of more choice for the consumer is considered a good thing, not a bad thing. Yaris, I see my time has expired. Could I have just a moment to make one quick point on the diversion question of diversion of mail that's advertising that's already in the mail out of the mail, and the contention that that means the agreement will not operate to the net benefit of the Postal Service. I point again to 147 to 48 of the Joint Appendix. This is the petitioners telling the Commission that they had engaged a market research kind of firm, an economic consulting firm, to analyze mail trends. And that firm reported that in 2008 and 2009, 650 million pieces of mail that had been previously advertising that had been previously mailed by newspapers had left the mail because of these cheaper delivery options. They predicted that this trend would continue through 2012. I'd also point to the court at page 398 of the appendix. That's a survey that the petitioner conducted of its members asking what would happen if the Velastis agreement was approved. 67% of them said they would not pull their product out of the mail. I'd like more time, but I see I'm out.
I just have one question.
Yes, sir.
A procedural question about the proceedings before the commission. Did the commission hold any evidentiary hearings?
Not in this instance.
In this
it was paper submissions.
It was all paper submissions.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the court, Morgan Rarig for the intervener, the United States Postal Service. Judge Randolph, to your question about Professor Panzer's testimony, yes, he was concerned about harm to individual competitors, but that was subsequently addressed when the PRC promulgated its regulations and said that an NSA has to be a functionally equivalent NSA has to be available to similarly situated mailers. So,
so that was the way that harm to individual competitors was supposed to be dealt.
Exactly. And that's the Postal Service has repeatedly said that it is always willing to consider entering into an NSA with a prospective mailer. And on the record specifically, it had said that the Postal Service is willing to enter into a functionally equivalent NSA with newspapers or other mailers provided, and it's a three-part criteria.
Of course, that only deals with competitors who are using the mails. If the newspapers are having Sunday deliveries by paper boys or whatever, then that doesn't help them at all, right?
It helps them in the sense that if they would like to bump it up a day or two and to take advantage of some of the rates that might be applicable to them through an NSA, there's nothing that precludes them from doing it. And I also wanted to address petitioner's repeated argument that the PRC's precedent has changed, that in the past the PRC has considered unreasonable harm to individual competitors, and now suddenly it hasn't. Petitioner's argument fails because he relies on pre-PAEA cases that explicitly refer to harm to individual competitors in light of a now obsolete rule.
So you do think the statute did change things?
There's a provision that was in the pre-PAEA regulations, Rule 193F, that said that the Postal Service was required to submit information to the PRC about how an NSA would impact individual competitors. It was an entirely separate provision from the provision that required an NSA not to cause unreasonable harm to the marketplace. And in 2006, Congress explicitly codified the unreasonable harm to the marketplace language of former Rule 190B It did not codify.
So your argument is it wiped the slate clean.
They wiped it entirely clean, and in fact, subsequently the PRC explicitly revoked.
Does that suggest that the NSAs that took place under the old regime have no precedential value or limited precedential value then?
No, I think what it suggests is, one, across the board, regardless of the framework now or before, the PRC has never defined unreasonable harm to the marketplace. But to the extent that the previous cases discuss harm to individual competitors, they do so in light of this now obsolete rule, Rule 193F.
Your position, according to your brief, is that on the question of delegation, that let's say whether the resolution was an unlawful delegation is irrelevant because it's undisputed that the governors authorized the Postal Service to enter into this particular NSA.
Yes.
And you're relying on the comments which were not the factual assertions made before the commission that were not countered. Is that what you're relying on?
Yes, Your Honor. And as you said earlier, it is entirely true that VALPAC attacked the validity of the resolution. Putting the resolution aside, the Postal Service came forward and said that Postal Service management had presented the terms of the NSA to the governors. The governors reviewed the NSA. The governors approved the NSA. And nothing after that statement challenges it. The record is completely undisputed on this point. If the court has no further questions, I rest my brief.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Does Mr. Long have any time? All right, why don't you take 2 minutes?
Three quick points, Your Honor.
Could you address my question about the change in the statute?
Yes. The statute certainly did not change the standard, Your Honor. Congress adopted verbatim the unreasonable harm to the marketplace standard that the commission had formulated, and this Rule 193F that's explicitly required submission of evidence on harm to competitors, along with other things, that was the rule that said what evidence you needed to show that there was not unreasonable harm to the marketplace. They were very directly related. So there was certainly no change. I mean, we actually argue that Congress ratified the standard, but, you know, even if you don't go that far, Congress was certainly not expressing disapproval or noting that there was a change. So, in addition, a related point was that, in these prior NSAs, competitors never came forward and complained. But as this court held in Kidd Communications, an agency, unlike a court, can make policy either through rulemaking or adjudication. When it does so by adjudication, it has to explain a change, whether or not it's dicta, especially when it's articulated the reasons for the rule. And as you go back and look at these NSAs, there's lots of articulation of the reasons for looking at harm to competitors. And so this unexplained shift to the predatory pricing standard, is not sufficient. And the final point is the commission recognized, I think, an oral argument here that harm to competitors of the NSA partner has to be considered. That's what you were discussing. But very simply, that's not what the commission said. At JA 548, it said...
I'm not sure that there was such a concession. And if you try to parse Professor Panzer's testimony, it's not clear whether he's talking about in the Lassus competitor situation, he's talking about harm to competition or harm to the individual competitors of the last.
I think it's very clear, Your Honor, that he's talking about, and if you read the testimony, individual downstream competitors can suffer. There's a great deal of talk about Pareto optimality, which would mean nobody's made worse off at all. A lot of discussion about the ideal would be Pareto optimality. That's not always achievable in the real world, but you still look at that harm and you may try to redistribute it, and that's actually discussed at length and actually picked up in the NSA. But in this case, this is what I would close on, the commission adopts this different test. At 548, it says, under this test, the test they adopt, as long as the Postal Service is not pricing its products below cost to drive its competitors out of business, it is not creating an unreasonable level of harm in the marketplace. So we've discussed a lot of issues. I'm not sure how far the court will want to go, but at a minimum, that standard adopted without prior notice, no explanation of the change of position, saying all that matters is whether the Postal Service has priced its products to drive its competitors out of business, is wrong, and it has to go back. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Does Mr. Dallas have any time? All right. Give me a minute.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
I never turned down a minute.
Three quick points. On the question about the governor's authorization, I think it's noteworthy that this was a comment-only proceeding. There was no way to challenge factual assertions on the record, no cross-examination, no receiving evidence, comments only. Second, I think Mr. Clare made a very important admission in talking about the downstream market.
You had an opportunity to file reply comments.
I think the comments were submitted before the information request, and I think that did not, the later one did not ask about authorization.
Well, you filed comments, you raised the resolution. The Postal Service replied and said, doesn't matter because it was actual authorization and here's our evidence or whatever. And you never replied to that.
Your Honor, I would simply have to go back and look at the record below to see if there was another opportunity. I'm not sure. The second point, Mr. Clare's admission, in talking about the downstream market, as I understood it, he said, what Velasys does with the pricing it gets from the Postal Service is speculative. There's nothing in the record about that. I think that's very telling about what the Commission did or did not know about the downstream market. And the third point, we did not have a chance to talk earlier about the due regard for small business issue, and I simply want to note for the Court that the main defense that the Commission has offered, which was that this was not highlighted, I think is really inaccurate. If the Court would look at JA 358, which is the notice of filing that described what was being put in the record.
All